All right, everyone. Welcome back. I really appreciate your continued support. You watching and listening, however you're absorbing and digesting the information. Your support is very, very important. I do this for you, partly for me, but mostly for you. We have a very, very special guest on today. His name is Bob Woolham. He is, I will always, and I said to him just a minute ago, always know you as Pastor Bob. He is the man who was the pastor at the church that I am currently actively attending. And he's one of the prime reasons that I'm there. You know, the fact there's a story I can tell at another time. This is not my interview. This is not my place to tell my story. It's time for him to tell his. And like I always say, I could give a 5-minute amazing intro and all the achievements in life that you've had and all the wonderful things that you've done. But the fact is, people like to hear it from the source. So I'm going to go ahead, Pastor Bob, turn it over to you. Tell us a little bit about your story as a youth, all the way up to where you are now. Whatever, however deep you want to go
No.
into it, I'll listen and we'll just go from there. So welcome. Thanks for being on tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you for having me, Jeff. Yeah. Amazing achievements. My skin is impervious to bullets. That's what I always tell people. But that's not true. So I grew up in the middle of a small town in rural America in Ohio, which I'm now living back here now. And I had actually, a privilege of having both parents, parents that love me, parents that set structure and boundaries, you know. So I would call it a good childhood. My dad was is still a businessman. My mom really was at home for growing up most of my life. And faith was a big part for them and in our family. But for me, it was something that I was sort of drugged to everywhere. So I was the youngest of three, and I went to church, but I really didn't care. So that's sort of my faith start. But so you can imagine being privileged and blessed and having the sort of right up upbringing, being around all the stories, always being at church and in the community. And it's not to say that I didn't have friends. The church wasn't impactful, but like I just didn't care about God. I just did those things, listened to my parents to a degree so that they weren't on my back. I guess that's the easiest way to say it. So I had faith in the sense of like I had a base that I couldn't escape because I had to go to church. But I didn't have faith in the sense that I was still sort of doing whatever I wanted on the side. So it's a weird faith journey to say you don't really care about God when God's provided and kind of set you apart in a very privileged way that, you know, there's a lot of people who don't have two parents. Like that's a blessing in itself. I went to college in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and the only reason I went there was my father said he would pay for school, or at least a significant part of it, if I went to a Christian school, which I wasn't dumb. I was like, I don't want to pay for all this. I was just going to get away anyway. So the only college I knew was that was Christian, believe it or not. I was so sheltered in this little community. It's like a farming community, was one that my pastor's son went to for one semester. It was called Calvin College, which turns out it's a liberal arts college. Turns out it's really difficult college too. I didn't know it was that hard. Didn't know a lot about, I actually, and this is how crazy it is. I didn't even go for a visit. I just sent in my
Just like, all right,
whatever.
let's go.
That just kind of shows you where I was at. I was like hanging out in the front, whatever you want to do. So college was just kind of like, yeah, what are you going to do? I don't know. So I decided to get a teaching degree. I enjoyed to teach. That's one thing I always did. And at college, it was just kind of party as much as I could and go to school. And I did that for a long time and had a lot of friends and just did whatever I wanted. So my life for quite a while was really, I mean, you can use whatever words you want, but it was just wayward, crazy. I just, the list of things that I'll never worry about my sons, because I don't think that they'll pull half the things I did. I seriously don't. I seriously don't think. And really, I left when I was 18 and then never came back home. Like, I mean, I would come home for certain things, but I was left and gone paying things and just, man, just doing whatever I wanted. And I didn't care. So apathy was a significant problem in my life. Mm. Long story short, I got done and graduated, and there came a significant turning point in my life where I woke up one morning and I was just getting tired. I was tired of the lifestyle. I was tired of the people. I was tired of everything. And I just remember looking in the mirror, and you just like, there was this sort of like, who are you? Like, why are you doing this? It's sort of all these existential questions like hit me at once. And little did I know, like that was God's spirit, like specifically saying, like, you know, have you ever had that thing? Like, you know, something's inside of you, like much better than what you have been or what you are doing right now, whether it's a job or whatever it may be. There was just this overwhelming thing of like, what are you doing? You're an idiot. And it was in there. It was a strange prayer. It's like, all right, God, I'm tired and it's time. Whatever we're going to do. And long story short, I had been dating my wife along with other women. She said I could only date one at once. So I chose her, and that was a smart move. And it was a very smart move. She's a smart woman. And this is the center of my life. And we moved. I moved out of my house with like 10 guys I lived in. I got married right around the time. And we went to a church, a little church. It was a cool little church. And it was full of people who never went to church before. It was very evangelistic church. And so there are all these people who were genuinely happy you were there, like really happy. And that's when my life and faith like took off. It was, okay, God, I'm tired. And in that span of within like a month, all this stuff started happening and people began to pour into me. And I was there for a couple of years, began to volunteer. And there came a point where somebody said, man, you'd be good at this. Do you want to intern? And I had a job as a pastor here at the church, which is code for, we're not going to pay you anything really. And you work full time. So I said, I don't know. And you know, I had all that base and knowledge before of the Bible and all these things. And suddenly my faith started becoming alive and they sort of intersected and it just became something. So I said, yeah, I do it. And, I was running a large center that helped kids learn how to read and had a bunch of teachers. And I stepped away and I stepped into this, and I was just doing administrative stuff, helping the church. It just moved into a building. It was chaos and setting stuff in order. And I had a way to do that. Like I knew how to see things and say, this is a way and make it a reality. That's what I was doing. And then there was one day, like a year in, like, you should preach on this date when, you know, when nobody's going to be there, because the pastor couldn't find anyone. And I said, okay. And I remember preaching that day, and that was it. Like, it was one of these, like, I think I'm supposed to do this, like, do this. Didn't know, but before then, like, but that's what I really felt called to do, like a real calling. And so I told him that, and he said, well, let's have you practice, because I needed a lot of work. And so we did. And he let me do it for a while. And then I started taking classes online, graduate level classes. And there was a guy, my wife was in cosmetology. She cut hair. And long story short, we began to pray. And I always said, like, for some reason, I was anti-education to a degree. I was like, I always said I'd never go to seminary unless somebody paid me, as a joke, because I looked at what seminary did to some people, and they didn't seem to be on fire. They seemed to be kind of caught up in the clouds, and you can do that, like get to study the Bible but never really know God. I think it's possible. And seminary can be a great experience, and it also could take fire away from people. So long story short, I was wrong. But he told my wife basically he'd pay for my education. I'd never met him.
Whoa.
Like, ever. And so, like, I didn't know what the guy did or who he was. Little did I know the guy was loaded, right? I mean, he was just a wealthy man. And so I emailed him, and I just thought, well, I'll just tell him what it cost for 4 years, you know? I was like, well, here's what it would cost. And he emailed back with, like a three-word sentence. Sounds good. Let me know where to send the check. That was it.
What in the world?
Yeah, you ever heard that one? And so, like, it gets better. I'll just go down this rabbit trail because
yeah,
I think God has a sense of humor that we don't see, we don't think about. So this man pays for all of my education, never meeting me, never batting an eye, just writes a check. Like, who does that to a guy you don't know? My wife cut his hair. That's how. And he was a man who said, I make a lot of money. I like to give it away. And I like to give it away, not just to churches, but to people and to things that I believe in. And I believe I should help him in education. So I get to seminary, and I have to have an internship at a church. And now I'd been working at a church for 3 or 4 years, preaching, doing that. And they're telling me, like, all these things, like, you'll get to lead a meeting, maybe say a prayer. I'm like, I don't really, just let me study, take this. Like, cause I know what working in a church, like 10 hours is 35. Like, that's what it turns into be. Huh. And they wouldn't let me do it. Well, I said, okay, what if I just pay you the money for the class that I'm supposed to have? And then I have the experience. And they said, no, you have to go to a church. And so I said, okay. And I chose this church that was not part of their denomination, but it was this little startup. It was a new church, had no money. And the thing was, they had a fund set aside for new churches who took on interns that the school would actually pay the person. And so here's where it gets funny. Like, my checks would actually come from the seminary. So to go to seminary, I was being paid by them. And I remember the first, check looking at it. And there was this reminder, like, remember when you said you wouldn't go to seminary unless somebody paid you?
Wow. Yeah.
Right.
There you go. God's got a sense of humor, right?
Yeah. There was like, oh, okay. And so that was kind of church too. Like, I had to leave this community I loved and people, and they understood, like, okay, this guy has got a calling, and went to school and was working at this little church that grew into a very big church, a couple thousand people in the span of like 6 years, 7 years.
Wow.
And again, I was doing the same things. I began to teach more. I was one of the teaching pastors, but I just helped organize and set it up, and like my fingerprints are all over that church in the sense of, like, that's there. I was there in the meetings that we had an idea, and now I can see it. It's cool because it's like, hey, yeah, I remember when we were sitting there like dreaming what that would look like 10 years from now. So I was helping create things, hand them off to people, and I was doing that. Loved to teach, I had my own interns. I just had it good. And then I woke up one morning and I just was kind of like this feeling like, whether, I don't know if I need a challenge in my life. I'm still trying to kind of discover this. But my spirit had gone, and I don't know how to say it other than that. Like I still loved what I was doing, but I just was not drawn to what I was doing. And I told them, and we talked about it. It's like, I don't know. And there was another little church that had called, asked me to teach a couple times. And maybe it was because it was too easy at the time. Like, when you got people that do all your work for you and okay, you're sort of overseeing things. It's not that you weren't working, but yeah, you were, I wasn't in the midst of it.
You lose your passion for it. Like you had said, you know, when you see people go to seminary, they don't really have the fire, the passion, they're in the clouds. Were you starting to get that? You were losing the passion for what you were doing? You said your spirit had left you in it.
Yeah. Sometimes I think before people make big moves, I've noticed this. This is always a saying somebody wiser than me said. He said, your spirit moves before your body will, meaning like your heart in it will often go first, because your mind will say, no, you can't leave. You can't do that. You can't make that change. And I found that true. And this is sort of what happened in my heart, was like, I wasn't so much in the clouds. It's like, it was this thing where I was like, inside of me, I just was not as passionate about it as I was before. And it began to just kind of dwindle. And before, it just kind of turned into a job. And you know, like, you can go through the motions of a job, and my body was saying, don't leave, it's a good paycheck, it's easy, but something inside of me was saying there's something more, something bigger, and my spirit was calling me to another church. And it was a weird transition because I had known Dan from, who was a worship leader, and he was at the last church I was at. Mm-hmm. And they called me up. Their pastor had passed away. And in seminary, they told me two things. Don't go to a church where a pastor is there for the long time. Don't be that guy that follows that guy. And don't go if someone passes away. And I think I was there for like 12, 10 years, and he had passed away. So it was an 0 for 2 thing. And wow. I didn't like the church, but they didn't have anybody who could teach. So they would call me and they said, could you teach? I said, yes. So I showed up one Sunday, and then they said, we don't have anybody for next week. I thought, okay, so there should be some red flags, right? Like, okay, I'll preach next week for you. That's fine. And then it happened again the next week after that. They're like, hey, we don't have anybody who's there. Can you preach again? And I said, yes, but this is the last time, because I knew they were sort of in this mode of looking for people. I said, it's not really fair to just have one guy in. I'm like, I'm not there. And it was this weird thing that the pastor who passed away had called me a year before, and he had set up a time to preach a year later. And I've never had that in my life. And this is when it gets to like, okay, something was happening. And I set it on my calendar. He's like, can you preach this date a year from now? I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's free. So I set it up, and believe it or not, it was like 2 months to the day after I had preached the second time. So it was like, I had one more date on my calendar for the same church that had asked me 3 times in a row.
Wow.
And I went there, and only reason I went there is because I used to play music with Dan, who was the worship leader. And long story, it's a long story as it is, I don't care. And I got there the third time and I preached, and they said, we'd like you to be the interim pastor. And I said, do you think you should see my resume first? Literally, that was my words to them. Like, They didn't ask me about it. They just flat out said, we want you to... They never even talked to me. They were in these, like, there was nothing. It was like a cold call. Like, we want you to do this. And that was a really weird experience. Like, maybe I should talk with you guys, like sit down with your elder team or sit down with whoever's in charge. It was, no, would you like to be? So I sat down, and that was five and a half years. We worked in that church. A lot of changes went from like, it was basically me full time and a worship leader who was there 9 hours. When I left, there were 12 or 13 staff. It had no building at the time. We had building and the land and, you know, all those numbers. And it is still a cool place. Like, mm-hmm. God did tremendous things in the span of 5 years, from numerical, financially, building, people, spiritual, just an absolute blessing. So and it got to a point after year five or so where we had moved in, really humming, people all in the right place, a lot of peace. Like, there was a lot of struggles in those 5 years, and I had that same feeling, like, there's something else for you. And I've always been one that's sort of leaned into, if I feel God saying something to me, I check with other people. But if he is, I might as well go and do it, because he's really been faithful to me when I do. And that's when I just told the elder team, like, this doesn't make any sense, because, like, we are where, like, this is really humming. Like, this church is really humming. It's where it's just taking steps where it's supposed to be, staff, all of it.
Yep.
Just great. But I feel like I just need to step away. Like, I feel like somebody else is supposed to be in here. And I don't know why. I don't. And there was a lot of discussion. I was talking to counselors, talking to wise people about, like, I don't get this. And they're just like, well, if you feel God saying that, you need to do it. And I had a bunch of other churches call me to say, would you take a job? Would you do this year? Would you do this year? And I'm like, no. My wife actually said to me, and this is what's weird, it's like, I think we should just go back to Ohio. And like, she's not an Ohio girl. It's like, she's not a country girl. Not a country girl at all. It's different living in the country than in a city. And especially here to where we were. And I thought, boy, that's odd. So I called up my father who runs a company. I said, I think I'm going to move back and I need a job. Can I have a job if I move back for a while until I figure out what God's asking us to do? But I think he's calling us back here, and it doesn't make any sense. And he said, yeah. And so that was one of the hardest things I've ever done. And I still don't understand it completely to this day. Like, I'm getting clues about what God is doing. But I've been here about 2 years. And inside of that, I sort of been put in charge of a business, running one here while I'm here, going to church. You know, one of the things I've learned, like, in the transition was, it takes so much away from you, as everything can, but especially being a pastor, being called, so much. And I've found my family, not that I lost my family, but I was never as close as I am now to them. And okay. So, like, one of the things that I began to learn was how important that balance was, and how poorly I violated sort of their relationship with me, sort of took them for granted. So, long story short, that's sort of the story where I'm at now. I run a landscaping company, and sell hardscape mostly. And hardscape is rocks. I always tell people I just sell rock. It's a joke that I'm selling drugs. And it's been a business that is unique to get into, but it's been fun. And so there's the long story.
Thank
long.
You. Yeah, that was a lot there. So I don't think any of my questions I presented to you through email, we're going to touch on those. We'll see. But I'm curious with this, what you're doing right now, is this the business that you said your father was always a businessman? Is this the one that he's always had, or has he had a series of businesses? Does he still have a series of businesses?
Yeah, he's got a series of them. This was one they sort of fell into. So as an agricultural business, it's a community, and they had a lot of equipment, a lot of they did a lot of specialized work. So they have agronomists. And basically, if you want to grow anything, they would be the people that you would go see if you were a farmer. Like, and the main crops are like corn, soybeans, wheat. Those are the main ones. So you want to do that well. You would buy all the product from him. He could actually apply it, put it on your field. So they had all this equipment. They had a couple of agronomists, and they did a bunch of custom work that way. With that, what happened was they also had with these loaders and trucks and things, and they began to sell stone for people's driveways. That was it. Like, so
like
there's
gravel?
A lot of stone. Gravel.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
So you might have in the country a gravel lane that led to your house as a cement pad, and your house is, you know, with a basement, and you shoot hoops outside your garage. But your gravel gets a hole in it. You need some more stone. Well, somebody was saying, man, I wish we could get, it's a rural community, I wish we could get landscape. Well, they had the loaders, they had the trucks, they had all, so they started selling it, and they backed into not really understanding the market that was there for basically anything outside of your home that you want to make it beautiful. They now sell. We now sell.
Okay.
They had nobody leading it. Nobody running it, and the thing is, it just keeps growing because it's what you call blue ocean. Like, there's not a ton of competitors where we're at. And in fact, even the big box stores can't compete with our prices, so even them, it's easy to outsell them.
Okay.
And since, like, my two of my nearest competitors are 45 minutes either way. You're left with, like, you can sell, that market is there for the taking, in the sense of, like, there's a lot of potential possibilities, and it just continues to grow. And they only invested like 10, 12 grand because they had everything there to start it, mm-hmm. not knowing. And I think companies do this sometimes, not knowing, like, whoa, we could do that. And it's really easy to do and watch this thing grow. And now they needed somebody to actually oversee it. It's to a point where there's people there, that need some oversight, and there was no marketing. There's no, you know, there's just, the salesmen need some more training, like the policies and procedures and delivery, all of this stuff. It just, it needed some help. So it's a side business in the sense of, like, this is this thing that sort of happened, and we're trying to do all of this stuff over here. Okay. Can you just tear this?
Like, so this is what you're doing. This is when you said, hey, we're coming back to Ohio, you got something for me. He more or less said, yeah, we can probably get you in here.
Yeah.
So this has only been a handful of years then.
Yeah. Well, I think it'd been going on, like, the gravel stone stuff had been going on for years, but that was nothing that it was very small. And so probably less than 10, it had been going on, and it just continually grows. Now it's to a point where it's a significant chunk of a couple of those businesses. And it's where, like, now, you know, how something grows and grows and grows and you don't notice it. And then you look at a number and you're like, how much? Okay. Maybe we should actually consider, like, how much in sales did that do? And you're like, okay, we should probably put some more consideration to how we're doing this, if it is that significant. So, yeah. So I stepped in, and it's sort of been baptism by fire, you know?
Okay. So I'd say that's probably a pretty big surprise. It sounds like all around, from your father, everybody else involved, you yourself, you know, that calling to move back to Ohio, and all of a sudden this thing is starting to explode, and now it's continuing to, and you're in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
See this manager. The right place, right time. So, yeah. This is a pretty far cry from getting a teaching degree at a Christian liberal arts college. So I'll say, I mean.
Oh.
So you left at 18, and you came back for holidays and stuff. You were gone for a number of years. So, like, you did you meet your wife at Kelvin then?
She was my roommate's sister.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So he said one day, you should date my sister. I'm looking at him like, yeah, I don't, this could go really wrong if I date your sister. I'm surprised you would say that. So that was the beginning right there. So, yeah.
So how long were you guys together then? It was a couple years before you got married? Like, you had graduated already, or were you still in school?
It's right at the end of school. I was student teaching. Yeah, we were together 2 years before we were married. So, and I think we've been married 18, 19 years now. So
it sounds like she was pretty, pretty impactful in your life, not only in obviously making the wise decision of monogamy, but in other areas as well. And I always love to ask the question, as far as who are your biggest influences that had an impact on your life? I'm not even going to dare say it. I'm going to say, I'm sure that she was one of those. I mean, that school, hey, we're going to do this. It's just going to be us. And all of a sudden, I don't know where she grew up. I don't know if she's a big city, New York or Chicago, but all of a sudden you're in rural Ohio again, you know, however many years later, and you're kind of like, wait, what? So.
She was definitely one of them. Another one, you know, was a guy named Brian Ollick. He was at the church that I went to be an intern. He was the lead pastor while I was in seminary, the one that really exploded in growth. And he pushed me harder than I've ever been pushed by anyone at any job.
Okay.
And I don't know why, whether he saw potential, and he was very, very, very detail-oriented guy. He was very particular in nature, and he just began to show me, and he walked right beside me, And even down to the ways and things that I wore on stage, and the message is the medium, and sometimes the medium is the message. And there was all sorts of lessons he began to teach me, and he really, really pushed me to be better. And I hated it at times, and him, and it was hard. And we had really brutally honest conversations. And it was one of those ones where, like, it was a big step, but I always told him, just be honest, talk on it. And he said the same thing to me, where we could be really brutally honest. But in the same sense, together, what we were able to accomplish, what God was able to do through us, it, like his ideas and just his oversight, it's pretty amazing to see how impactful it was, not only in our lives, but like in the community and lives of people. So having someone that would invest in you that way and push you that hard, and I don't know why, just he didn't do that with everybody, but he did with me for some reason. And that person, he's another man. And I would say that to anybody who is in business, who oversees anyone or in any sort of leadership role. Like, if you're not investing in someone underneath you, and maybe you're not at that point, maybe you'll get to that point, or maybe you don't have anyone who can invest, ask or pour your life into someone else. And, you know, you're supposed to make a disciple. And I think there's a lot of ways you can do that. It's not just, I think, a Christian thing. I think it, like, as in church, and I just make a disciple spiritually. I'm in every area of life. Like, the problem is there's a lot of people with a lot of gifts, and a lot of people in leadership and companies all over that are going to die with that gift and die with a lot of wisdom and knowledge that they've never shown to people. Like, you know, and I see that all the time. I see young people coming up, and I see people struggling. Have you ever seen somebody struggle and you've been there, and you're like, hey, I've been there, man. You don't want to do that.
Yep.
And
sometimes
so,
you just have to give that unsolicited advice. They're not even asking for it, but you know it's going to save them months, years, hundreds, thousands of dollars of, you know, difficulty. And you're kind of like, I don't even care if you want it or not, but this is what it's going to look like probably. Yep.
Yeah. And there's a time, place, and ways to say it, but are, you know, the young people coming up to finding and asking for mentorship help. You know, there's a lot of people that would love, love to invest in people. I think a lot of people who have been there, who are retired, it's like, man, teach me what you did or how you did it. You know, I wish I was more humble when I was younger to say that to some people.
Me too.
So
me too. Yeah. Absolutely. I got to ask the question about this man who essentially funded your college here. What's the relationship like with him still, if at all? I mean, is he old enough where he's since passed on, or?
No, he has not passed on. It was, and it's never been. I met him once. I've wrote him letters and emails to express my gratitude after a person said, you should do this down the road. You should do this here. You should do this many years from now, so that he understands what his gift has done. So I've done those things. But I... not in touch with him, like, legitimately, like, it's just one of those God moments.
Absolutely. Absolute blind gift. Just this thing that your wife knew, and you know, cut it. It's such a random, no other explanation than God thing. You know, some people would argue, oh, coincidence, whatever. There's no coincidence that I've ever met, wealthy, unwealthy, whatever, where somebody said, yeah, I'm going to pay for somebody's college that I have no vested interest in. I have no ROI expected. You know, there's nothing there. Just, I'm going to bless this person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's you've got an awesome story that is absolutely incredible on that, man. Just absolutely incredible. You coming back into Ohio, I'm guessing you didn't have a whole lot of experience in what you're doing right now with the selling rocks. hard skating. Yeah. Like, what did you do to kind of get geared up on that? Like, how long before you moved back and you said, okay, I got 6 months. I need to get every book, every YouTube video, every whatever, get on the phone 2 hours a day. Like, what did you do to prep for that?
I think it was partially that. Partially was, you know, I worked a lot as a kid for my father's company, sweeping floors, warehouses. Wasn't that I understood the culture going back in. So it wasn't like this completely foreign thing I was going into. Like, so that's a blessing when you're like, I don't know what the company's like, how to talk, what to, you know. So I knew that part in the sense, like, I understand what they do and how they do it. I sort of understand this in the sense of, like, I'm part of the family, so I hear things. So I had a base, not a great base, but I had a base. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it was a lot of that, a lot of reading, just YouTube, reading, calling people, sitting down with, you know, when you get there, sitting down with people and say, explain every financial, explain how we get here. Hours of just taking home spreadsheets and looking at them and saying, okay, how does this work? Why is this way? Just asking a lot of annoying questions to everybody, to people who sell it. Well, why would you do this or say this? Why do we do it this way? Trying to just say, okay, how does this thing work? And then talking to some of, you know, your quote competitors, in the sense of just saying, what do you see? How did you do this? How does it work where you're doing? What's successful? What's not? And because they're so far away, and because their clientele base is even more different than mine, in the sense of they're closer to the larger urban area, one of them, and I'm more rural, very open and welcoming to, you know, questions, conversations, sitting down. Good. So yeah. It's just a lot of, and I'm still learning in that sense of like, oh, that I didn't know we did that. You know, I still get that. It's a lot less frequent now, but it's a lot of that, and a lot of saying, I don't know, but I'll find out. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not hard for me anymore. Like, the older I get, the less I don't care about what people think about me, in the sense of like, I gotta have all the answers. I was wound pretty tight for a while there. But it's easier now for me to say, I don't know, than it's ever been. Because I don't really know, and it's okay. So that's the thing. I you know, you got to learn to do that. Just sure. If you don't know, okay, find out and tell people. I don't know, but I will find out. And I will, you know, people. They're really warm and accepting when they say, oh, okay, he doesn't know, but he'll let me know.
That's the key right there, because I feel when I was a young salesman, and maybe you've experienced that, you know, what you're doing. Make something up that sounds good, and then you're like, whoops, I was 180 degrees in the opposite. They call you out if they know, or they find out the next day, and you're like, oh man. And then you got to swallow your pride, go back with your tail between your legs. And I found out the exact same thing not all that long ago. It's like, I don't know, I'm gonna get you an answer though. So I think I said that twice today when I was talking to people. There's things that come up that
you get so worried about losing a sale or looking professional or looking like what you do, you know, but you'll still run into times where you're like, I don't know that answer. Even the people who've been in it, I've called people with questions like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, okay, that's comforting. You've done this for 20 years and you don't know. So I found it, you know, when people can, there is a level of trust in that sense of someone being that honest with them, like, and they sort of drop their guard. They're like, oh, okay. It's not always, but it has been an odd experience to tell people that. And I don't know why we're so worried or afraid to tell people you don't know, like what it will present.
You could speculate all day, but I dare say it's ego. You don't want to look like you don't know, because you're supposed to be the quote unquote professional. You know, even if you've been doing it for 6 months, you know, so you want them to think that you know more than they do, or more than what you actually know. Maybe that's what it is. So who knows? So I got a kind of a two-part question here, with a little kick on it. So in the last year, everybody's had major, major things happen in the last year, whether your business ultimately thrived out of it, whether your business, you know, yours obviously hasn't closed, but I've talked to people that have had businesses that businesses have closed because of COVID, et cetera, you know, globally, locally, whatever. What's been kind of the hardest thing that you guys have gone through, and how did you get through it? How did God bring you and your business and your company through it?
Yeah, I think, you know, Corona virus really, and I would say this probably rings true for most people and most businessmen I've talked to and family who are in business different than mine, has really been a challenge for anyone in any kind of business, because it presents an unknown. You know, you have all these projections, you have all these goals you sort of set, where you're like, we're going to do this, and this is this, and this. And suddenly there's this thing that no one knows anything about. No one knows what will happen. You get one check. What are they going to do with that money? People are stuck inside. They're not stuck inside. You wear a mask. You don't. What about people? And there's all these like anxiety and tension. And that anxiety and tension and that unknown has been a significant hurdle to just say, it's okay. Like, I think we like to be in control, like I do at least. And it exposed how much we really don't have control of.
Yeah.
Right?
It's been a tough year. Yeah. To realize that. And if somebody like you wants to be in control of everything that I possibly can be, and then have to look at the big picture. And especially when I look at my 14-year-old and I say, I'm giving you this life lesson I wish I had 25 years ago. You control almost nothing in your life. I'm 25 years older and I'm finding this out now. I don't want you to go for the next 25 years thinking that you have so much control. Keep going. I'm sorry.
No. And you know, it smacks you in the face over and over again, even if you've said it. You get so used to like setting things, this is what we're accomplishing or doing. And suddenly you're like, well, I don't know what this is going to do. Like, now for the market I was in, it was, you know, we had all sorts of things we were going to push, all sorts of trade shows we're going to, you know, I had a trade show happening anyway. And then it was like, well, what do you do? Like, even something as small as like, okay, here's marketing. Here's where we're going to push. Here's the target areas. Here's how we're going to do it. You're like, well, do we do it? Because will people buy anything? Like, are you just going to waste money? Mm-hmm. We were in such a unique place, though, selling basically anything that makes the outside of your home beautiful. We have agronomists, we have fertilizers, we have, you know, but we also have hardscape. The thing that we didn't foresee, and this is what was hard, it's like, well, what do? Like, that's a big challenge. Like, I have all these plans. Maybe I should just scale it back. And that's what I did first. I'm like, okay, we're just going to scale everything we had planned back. We just can't spend. We're just going to play this safe. And when that was where I was going with it, not knowing that that market would explode. Happened to us was triple digit. Like, I was trying to grow by 6% this year, and it's in the mid-level triple digits.
Whoa.
Of growth. So all of a sudden, everybody didn't have anything to do. They had a stimulus check and they wanted to go outside. So what are you going to do? Well, you're going to take care of your yard. You're going to do that new project. You're going to build that new thing. I'm going to make my yard look nice.
Yep.
And nobody knew that was coming. Like, and all, you know, just praying, like, help me, give me peace, Lord. Trust you. You've been good to us. Like, that was the other thing, is like, how much do you really trust God with your business? Mm-hmm. With what you do. Like, it's easy to say, oh yeah. But then you go through all these things to ensure, like, this was also that point for a lot of people. Like, I trust you're going to care for my needs, not always my wants. I can't explain why I've been blessed in that sense. I can't explain. It was a nightmare in the sense of, you are never ready for that amount of growth. Just exhausting.
I bet.
Like, people are like, hey, you know, we're not working, we're not doing it. I was like, no, I'm working 65 hours. Like, mm-hmm. I, like, you're working 60, you're trying to hire, like, because another thing we do is, like, we, if you wanted rocks, like decorative rocks, lava rocks, you wanted bricks, you're going to create something outside. You want them dropped off. Well, we'll deliver them for you. So now I got to find more trucks, more drivers, and I have rocks and things coming from different states. Always, you know, with so many, because anyways, long story short, all that inventory, trying to make sure that comes in to keep up. What does COVID do to shipping?
Sure.
What does it do to inventory? And inventory is going like mad. Like it's always gone. And all of a sudden, do you have drive? Yeah, it was a lot. It's finally slowed down now. And I'm thankful. Yeah, I was just realizing, like, everybody wants to talk about growth. Explosive growth can be very challenging on everyone. It tests your ability to have patience in the sense of you're tired.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things that was a big surprise for us. What happened to that market? No one foresaw that ever happening. Mm-hmm. And then what happens to you when you're forced to try to keep up?
Yeah. So you're irritated, more easily irritable, you know, with your family, your children, your wife, your parents, your friends, your coworkers, your whoever.
Yeah. And people and just not working. And, you know.
Yeah. And then even with your clients too. And then there's that risk of, well, now I feel more pressure because I have to, you said, you got to get more trucks. You got to get the inventory in, because if all of a sudden it's, you know, 10 weeks before we get this, I got this check now. I want to spend it now. I want to spend the whole summer outside because I can't go anywhere. I'm going to find somebody else who'll get it done sooner, even if it costs 10%. You know, it's like a lot of industries experience that. And it was really, really a big shock, where even myself too, I think for probably 3 or so months where I was, you know, running, you know, double the appointments that I usually run in my day job, just going, you know, 6 days a week sometimes, going, whoa.
Yeah.
Nice. I'm going to go home, go to bed, and I'll put the orders in the morning and then keep going. So,
yeah.
So obviously. That's, you know, that's a success and a struggle all in itself too. I mean, what are some of the things that you're doing now that you've gone through that you said it slowed down a little bit? Are you continuing to, like, research different technologies with your agronomists, your fertilizers, these kind of things? Like, what are you doing to research what you need to do to make sure that you stay on top of it?
Yeah. Well, a lot of on top of it, what we deal with is fads for really housing. Like, okay, what's happening in these trade shows? What are people actually interested in moving? How can we move and change inventory to sort of match what people's tastes are, right? Mm-hmm. Where does that come from? So case in point, one of the things that's very popular now, you'll see a lot of houses are gray. Siding is gray or dark gray. You see that, or they're going white with black shutters, like a country look. I don't know if you've seen new houses. What they're doing with their landscaping and hardscape and all that is often very dark rocks, super black. Like, and this is like a fad that we suddenly discovered, like, wow, every single dark rock is selling, and anything with color does not seem to be. So how much of this am I sitting on? So it's one of the things, trying to stay on top of it, is trying to understand where that's going. And the only way you can do that is really in conversations with everyone who's selling, and also some of the brokers, calling them, who are, you know, in touch with people who do this across the country. It used to be you could go to a big thing was, like, trade shows really help kind of reveal, like, okay, this is what people are doing. This is where they're going. And so magazine, you know, you can look online, but it's a lot of calls of, like, what do you see selling? A lot of conversations of that, like, and you'll see. Then it's calling some of the guys who kind of are jockeys for us to say, what do you see selling across the nation, and where's it? They won't tell you where they get the product from. That's another thing. But, like, what this is what we see. What do you have product wise that would be for us? So It's kind of limited now for us, and that'll be a challenge because it's more leaning on to conversations and phone calls, because like to catch and understand those trends, I have to ask builders now, like, what do they see them doing with houses? Talk with some of them. I have to talk with the people who are actually selling. What do you see happening? And usually those fads don't change super fast. Staying to date with that is really important, because you want to sell the product you have and not, like, there's a product that I've sat on that I would pretty much give to you if you wanted it, because it's never going to sell for a couple of years.
Well, I'll make sure to get you my address. We'll figure that one out.
Pretty much give it to you. Wouldn't enough. And you would put it outside and you go like, that's kind of ugly.
No wonder.
So I understand.
Right. So tell me, in your business, the last 2 years, since you kind of went down there, roughly 2 years, what it is, obviously there's ways to run a business, ways not to run a business, success, fails, you know, rise and fall and all those things. How has, I guess the question is a little bit unique to you. I feel it is, maybe you don't feel it is, the listeners won't either, coming from your background, from Calvin, being a pastor, having all of your you know, experience with that, and then going into business, have there been times recently, and what were those like, where you say you got an opportunity for something, maybe not COVID, because obviously there was explosive, you just couldn't control that, but opportunities to do something that could really bring the business to the next level, you know, put you guys in the black, you know, exceed projections or whatever, that you just said, it's not ethically, morally, it doesn't fit align with, you know, my faith is going to prevent me from feeling good about this if we do this.
Yeah. Yeah. This one was hard, because I feel it's easy to like make, pronounce something or believe it, but like when it touches your finances, like that's, to me, that like when it has the ability to impact your finances, that's where the rubber meets the road, so to speak.
Well, that's your whole family too. You know, are we going to be able to get new clothes? We're going to have to go to secondhand. Are we going to eat name brand? You know, petty little things like that. But I mean, it's so far beyond too. Are we going to make the car payment? Or are we going to be a couple days behind? You know, even as much as that. So
one of the things for us was, and this was hard, like, I wanted some of the drivers to be at home with their family. And so Saturdays, you're not working. And Sunday, you're not working. And this was in the midst of explosive growth. Now, where do most people go on Saturdays? Well, they go out to shop and they go to Home and Garden Centers. They go to Lowe's, right? Which means
you are then correct.
I'm going to work. I'm going to still sell, but I'm not going to deliver, and I'm not going to put any product out on that day, because I believe they need to be home and experience a weekend. If you're working 10 to 12 hour days, 5 days a week, that's not a wise business decision. It wasn't, like, financially. I know it wasn't. And we've never opened on Sunday. That's not my policy. That's been my father's, which was my grandfather's. So it's just, that's never been a thing. But the one on Saturday where we said, yeah, can you drop it off on Saturday? Can you deliver it? He was like, no, we can't. And you
probably lost business sometimes on
But you still had
triple digit growth. I mean,
there's no probably on that. And that was hard. That was hard too, to say, you guys go home, you guys enjoy this. I'm going to be here. I'm not going to be here all day. I'll be here for a shorter amount of hours. I'll help people, but sending those people home, knowing that, I think that's important and valuable. And it went against, you know, it's just a lot of financial ramifications in making that. But it's good for the employees, I suppose, and their general well-being, I guess, mental health at least.
And other things, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I want to kind of close it out here, as we've gone, you know, for a while. We could probably talk for another hour on that. But I always have, you know, the question that always comes up is, if you could step into my shoes, Bob, and ask yourself a question I haven't yet, what would that be? The question you think the listeners would want to know what the answer is. Or maybe a question to know about me.
Yeah. I would ask you the question, like, what's your passion and desire with what you're doing now, like with this podcast?
Well, I'll answer that because we've talked about it ahead of time and nobody's asked me that yet. And I'm going to ask you the exact same question with what you're doing. This was not something that I was a boy and said, I want to be a famous podcaster someday. The term didn't exist when I was a child. The term didn't exist 10 years ago. You know, and mm-hmm. it was something that I never really said, I'm going to put my voice. I've never enjoyed my voice. Never.
No, it's nice. You should enjoy it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I've always thought it was really nasally. It never made sense, you know, to me and these kind of things, which is why I picked up the guitar and that was my instrument rather than singing. Yeah. So for me to do this was more, it started a couple years ago where I was part of a marketing group. I was in social media marketing and I was failing, epically failing, spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars a month. And just, I didn't know what I was doing. I was doing everything wrong. And somebody pointed me in the direction of this guy, and he was putting, this company was putting out their numbers every week. This is the prospected numbers. This is the recruited numbers. These are the sales. These are the new customers. These are the new business partners that we've had with our, you know, 10,000 members in our group kind of a thing. And I went, those numbers are unbelievable. I cannot deny the fact that those numbers are like earth shattering in the atmosphere, you know, looking at this like stratosphere, whatever you want to call it. So I started doing that. And his big thing was doing live videos on Facebook. Live videos. People get a chance to hear you, see you in your environment, get to know a little bit about you, hear your voice rather than just see you post something. And you get to talk about things that you might have an interest in, you might have some knowledge in, share that with other people. Because at the end of the day, public speaking as a pastor, I'm sure you've heard this, is more people fear public speaking than they fear death. And then mm-hmm. for you as a pastor and other pastors to get up there at least once a week and do that, it's different because you can't really see your audience, but it's not because you're exposed to an audience of potentially, you know, tens of thousands, depending on how many friends and da da da, what groups you're in kind of a thing. And that was mm-hmm. terrifying. And then once I did one, I was like, all right, I can do the second one. I can do another one. And there was a challenge at one point to do a topic that you have no knowledge of. And I went, I couldn't remember the last time I did high school algebra. So I had to do a high school algebra video, a 20-minute video on that. And my son was the closest thing I had to it. And at the time he might have only been in seventh grade. And I said, well, we're going to do middle school algebra then. And I'm like sweating bullets. I got a nice shirt on. I'm buttoned down. And he's sitting there laughing at me because I'm like, I don't know where X goes. So just the going through that was more of like, okay, I can do this. I can do this that so many people fear. And then I had an experience a year ago. This is, I was just doing this, you know, sometimes daily, sometimes three times a week. And then I had a partner I was dating for just a hair under 4 years, and that relationship came to an abrupt end. And this is the woman I thought, I'm going to marry this woman. We're going to have a life together. And then when that ended, it was not my choice. It was not my design. It was a matter of like, I felt completely out of control. And I started talking to a really, really close friend of mine. He's a very, very strong Christian. He's already been on here. He's the first episode. And I asked him if he knew any faith-based business podcasts, Christian business podcasts, because I was listening to a ton of your business podcasts, your inspirational, that kind of thing. And he said, I really don't. When are you going to start yours? And I kind of thought he was joking. And I said, yeah, next year on my birthday is when I'll launch it, you know, and I've got 14 months to go at that point. And I'm kind of like, maybe I'll forget about it. Maybe he'll forget about it. Well, apparently I'm kind of dumb because I put it in my Google calendar for August 1st, and it hit me August 1st, and it said, start putting together your podcast.
Oh, no.
And I just went, oh, man, like, I had enough. God was looking down. Tim was looking at me, and he's like, you know, you got to do it now. Like, it's in there. It hit you, and you're going to hold yourself accountable. You were accountable enough last year to do this, and you got to stick with it now. And I called him up, and I was like, hey, remember that little thing that you told me about last year and you asked when I was going to do it? And he's like, no, not really. And I went, oh, crap. Now I called myself out. So now I'm talking to him about it. He's remembering it. So I'm like, well, now I guess the ball is rolling. So it was just something that he just asked me a question. And I could have said, ha-ha, no, not going to do it. And I just had the idiocy to say, I'll do it next year. And here we are, and now we're talking and learning about you. I'm learning a lot about myself, my own decades of running away from God, like you had expressed early on in this, is you didn't really care for God. You didn't really care about God. I spent years running away, trying to get away. And then as circumstances would have it, you know, just here I am doing this. You know, you asked me 5 years ago if I'm doing this. I talk to my parents and they're like, we don't even know who you are sometimes, because the person you were for two decades is like so different than who you are now. And I looked at some friends from high school and they're just like, wait, what are you doing? You're involved in what? And so it's just, it was one of those things that just came up. So there was no real passion or desire or immediate need to, like, you know, like I need this, like I need to breathe. It just happened. And it just, it started moving so quickly. I had to run to catch up. And here we are.
Yeah.
So my question to you then is the exact same thing. Like, what drives you and what is your passion for what you do now? I mean, obviously you didn't, you know, 2 years ago, you're like, I'm going to go back to my hometown and I'm going to sell rocks.
Yeah. I think the passion for me is kind of two part, to enjoy God in all that he's given us. And that's not to say, like, I'm not even talking like money. I'm just saying one of my passions is learning to say, okay, there's so many blessings for any person in any situation every single day, even if it's as simple as breathing. And yet we don't take time to do that. Like, God's given us so much. And so part of this is learning how, in the midst of this day, to enjoy all that's around me, the creation, the family, the work, all this, and see it as a gift. And in turn, sort of with that passion, how can I then bless other people? Because I've been blessed so much. Like, it's easy to say you want to bless somebody, you want to help them out, but you do it with the wrong attitude or the wrong posture, because you in yourself don't see how fortunate, even in the midst of people going through super hard things, God is just constantly working to bless me, like, so many different ways. So how do I then bless and extend his kingdom with the little things I have in every single day interactions with people? Whether it's a smile, whether it's, I don't have time to talk to you, but I'm going to sit down and talk with you. You've been on this lot looking at this stuff for 55 minutes and I am getting tired of following you around.
Yeah.
But it begins to show up when you do that, when you begin to say, okay, I'm just going to try to bless these people. I'm going to try to, just extend God's kingdom through my love and blessing, whether it's my presence and my patience, it's love, whether it's sometimes financially ways you can do that, whatever it may be. So it's teaching me, and God has been teaching me, and it's becoming more of a passion in my life to first learn to enjoy yourself and the things around you. And maybe it's not the stuff, maybe it's the people. And then when you can do that and see how blessed you are, learn from that posture of blessings, how to take that and bless other people in your life every single day. And, it's changing me in the sense of, it makes me slow down and see the things around me that I had never seen, the people around me. And it also opens up avenues and outlets and things that I never had seen before, that people need people like that in the world. That's how God changes them, through small interactions. It's not these great evangelical crusades, not that they're bad, but like, it's through everyday people, whether it's in your business, whether it's in your interactions on the phone, you have thousands of them all the time that can change lives. And that's how God uses people. That's kind of my passion, learning how I'm blessed and how to take that and bless others so that God's kingdom continues to grow. So
along with passion, it almost sounds like that you feel like that's your purpose on this planet then, is to learn how you can bless other people, use the gifts that God has given you just to bless them, to make their life a little bit better.
Yeah. And I think it's in part like learning yourself and who you are, like in all these self tests that you take and personality tests that I've taken. One of the things I realize is I always see things, whether this is good or not, whether the number you follow on or whatever it is, whatever personality, I always look at things and say, that could be better. Like that is my natural bent, to look at something and go, that, as cool as that is, man, there's ways to make this a lot better, which is good. I could reform and change these things, but it also presents a challenge because you never fully see everything around you as, man, really good. You're always looking at it like it's either broken or you can make it better. Hmm. When, you know, so that there's a drawback to that.
Sure.
And it's learning it. And so that making it better part has really been beneficial in things like in church work and nonprofit work and how do we create and make this thing and looking at things critically. But it also has had its drawbacks in my life in the sense of like, that's a great strength, it's a great weakness in the sense of you haven't really fully enjoyed everything because you're always looking to say, how does this get better? How do we do this better? Like learn to, in the sense of like, how do you become a person of purpose who sees the goodness in everything around you and that it's good enough? Like in that same sense, and that's a delicate balance. I fail at that a lot, that's what I'm learning.
Yeah, that it's good enough is a tough one that I struggle with too. And sometimes I've noticed for people, it's not a matter of just it's good enough, but it's getting deeper. I'm good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Taking it to that level. Yeah. So I don't know if you want to talk your business specifically, what it's called, where it is, but I always ask, well, how do people get a hold of you? Somebody is inspired by this and they want to get a hold of you. Somebody hears this and they're like, where is he at? He at what part of rural Ohio? How can I buy rocks from this guy? Legally? Am I that?
Legal rock.
How,
yeah.
How do we get a hold of Bob? How can we reach him? Are you on social media? You guys have a website? You want to give out a phone number? I mean, I'll post this stuff too, but
I think the easiest way to get a hold of me, you can call me or email me. I mean, I have a website, but it also has a couple other businesses on there. So that's one thing that sort of I'm working on recreating. So email me at bob.woolham@gmail.com. That's the easiest way. It's the one that goes to my phone. I can look at it and respond quickly. Or you can call my work at 419-596-3896. So okay. Just ask for Bob, and if I'm around, I'll pick up. So
cool. And what's the business called? Care to share?
The business is called Woolham Landscaping. It's okay. Just last real original. The
well, it's
other
hard, it's
part,
hard, you know, you can't call it like Central Ohio, and then you guys move to Pennsylvania. It doesn't work that way. But I get what you're saying. Yeah.
And the other part of the business is called Woolham Agricultural Center. It's on the same lot. Basically, that's sort of how we fell into it. We had a lot. We had a loader. We had some trucks. Let's try to sell something and realized it sold. So awesome. There's stuff going on all the time. So,
okay. Well, Bob, what do you have? Do you have a favorite Bible verse, favorite part of Scripture? Maybe you have a couple of them that you just love to read. You read them every day. Your day is really, really tough, and you come back to that, and it just brings you back to a place. I mean, you got one, you got two, you got 10?
One, two, or 10.
However many. At least one.
At least one. You know, I studied the Bible for, 15 years. I probably would read 3 or 4 hours a morning. But one of the ones that has been impactful for me is in Ephesians. And it just talks about being made alive in Christ. And I got to find the actual verse here. Here it is. Hold on. It says, consequently, you are no longer foreigners or strangers, but fellow citizens with God's people. So Ephesians 2:19, build on the foundation of the apostles and prophets of Jesus Christ. And it's an idea, a mindset that you understand that we're all just God's children. Yeah. And no matter who you are, what you come from, what your background is, we're all the same at our core. Once we come to Him, that's how God sees us, as His children. That's how we're supposed to see other people. Mm-hmm. And we're joined together by Christ. And that's a mindset and a mentality to learn, that even if people are completely different than me, might look different, vote different, might even be religiously different, they're still God's children. It's just been just sort of a transformational thing to me to understand that I am not what I vote. I am not this. I am not that. I'm at my core God's child, which means I'm loved. Mm-hmm. And my seminary, one of my seminary professors always told me, it's not hard to make people believe there is a God, but it's hard to make people believe that God actually loves them. And I found that true.
Wow.
People will believe, yeah, there's some sort of being or creation, but people have a hard time understanding, man, no, that God loves you deeply. And it's been true in my life. I knew there was a God, but it took a long time to stand in the mirror and sort of invited God back into my life to realize, man, He sees me as His child and He loves me. I mean, what would you do for your kid? Anything.
Yeah.
For your son. And so that's why that verse for me has been pretty impactful. So
that's awesome. I really appreciate that. I thank you for sharing that. That's Ephesians has come up a lot for me in the last 2 weeks, and I 6 months ago I couldn't even tell you what it was. That there's a book in the Bible called Ephesians. So that tells you a little bit about my journey and how fresh that is. And this is sometimes I feel underqualified to be doing this, but
nah, just follow God. Just do it.
Yeah. And that's what I'm doing. So I'm going to go ahead and clip the recording here again. Thanks, Bob, for being on. I really appreciate reconnecting with you after this time. And I appreciate it. It's been absolutely fantastic. Thanks again. I hope you have a wonderful night. Everybody for listening, watching, have a great day.
Yep.
Talk to you soon.
See you guys.